Danyon Brinkley, our special guest this hour. We're going to take your phone calls with him as we talk about his Twilight Brigade, and we'll also get involved in his Saved by the Light episode. He was struck by lightning several times, and here he is to talk about it. Okay, welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Danyon Brinkley with us. And Danyon, before we get to calls, let's talk a little bit about Saved by the Light. What's it feel like to get hit by lightning?
It's like drinking battery acid. I was paralyzed.
I've not done that either.
Yeah, I was, you know, the ball of fire burnt my eyes. I was paralyzed. And it took me 2 years to learn to walk and feed myself.
Oh, my God.
I discovered the other part of life, that who we truly are. And you know something, Georgia, this is what people, this whole life for 40 years, I had a, and in Saved by the Light I wrote about it, but it was about what was called the boxes of knowledge. And the goal that I had, two things, spiritualistic capitalism, that was part of my goal, which was to take writing books and help fund the Twilight Brigade, and then a center program. And so I used the Twilight Brigade and my hospice work to help develop a complementary profile. We need to identify an interdisciplinary allopathics. We need to look at complementary and alternative policy. You know, you look at what's happening with CBDs and cannabis and medical cannabis. Mm-hmm. You see the innovations that's occurring, and you watch what's happening in Israel, and you see how palliative and end-of-life care and creating a comfort zone, not using opiates and not using all the side effects, but finding natural remedies. And just like in West L.A., we have a Tai Chi program that keeps growing. And guys who were in wheelchairs are walking.
Wow.
People who were walking, and they're starting with yoga, and they quit taking the painkillers, and now the studies that are being done. This is a revolution, George. And what is so amazing to me is how the government fights it and how they say there's no value in these products when I see it myself and I watch what people are doing. And there's so many programs out there that this innovation and looking at complementary ways is important, but my job was to create a centers. I didn't realize that stress management was so important in 1975, but I have consistently, when I wrote Saved by the Light, it was defining what I was doing and what those visions were. At Peace in the Light was my attack program, what I was going to do to bring this forward. And today, George, I can say that the Twilight Brigade and where I've come from, getting up from the dead to creating a program that's recognized by HIPAA, and I help with the VA's palliative end-of-life care program. I help review it and help finalize it. So now it's the center program, which would end my mission, and it was 2017.
Had you not had these near-death experiences, would you have been, well, would you have been the way you are now, your attitude?
Absolutely not.
No.
I'd have been a prick. I mean, just like I've always been. You know, you
were a mean son of a gun.
There's no question about it, George. I didn't have any problem shooting you. My conscience never came out of the plastic bag. You know, and when you discover that you're a spiritual being and you have to, what the crisis of people who've had near-death experiences, George, is they can never not first look at themselves as a spiritual being. You cannot look at yourself as a human being. That pleasure is taken away. So you can never frame yourself as a victim. I have no ability to frame myself as a victim, although my back is bad, that you know. I live in constant pain. I will not live on pain medication. And I look at these goals that I think were set for me, and I'm quite proud to where I've come from, getting up from the dead to being where I sit, knowing that I can help transform the VA and transform complementary therapies. And I'm in the 20th, I think this year will be the 20th year.
Good for you.
We'll be 20 years old and growing, and I'm going to transform it next year, George. I'm going to grow into Transitional Training Brigade so that when we start to look at how the government's implementing these programs and what we're going to do in what whatever the new healthcare regime is, that I'm going to take Bill and Sandy Hatfield, who are Twilight Brigaders from the very first days, and go from to TTB, which used to be the Twilight Brigade, to TTB Transitional Training Program, so that people like Sean can get a chance to come in and separate religion from end-of-life care and really be able to focus and understand and help develop complementary and alternative ways that a veteran can find a zone so that they can have closure. If you have a person at the bedside, you have a program that they can go through where they can get a chance to experience what it's like to separate from this body and then be able to face end of life. And that would be the ultimate goal of the legacy of Danyon. And I'm there, George.
What drives you, Danyon?
I think what drives me is this, and this is my saying, is that what you learn from going through the Panoramic Life Review, and I say God, but the divine, that when you look back at your life, you see your life pass before you in a 360-degree panorama, and you watch it from a second-person point of view, as though you were your own best friend, and you laugh and make fun of yourself, and then you look at how stupid stuff you do, and then you literally become every person that you've ever encountered, and you feel the direct results of your interaction between you and that person. And then the bottom line is this: if the divine, or if God could not come to that day and God sent you in the life you just reviewed, what difference did you and God make? Well, if I believe what I say and have said this for now 40 years, what I get to do is when I'm at that veteran and I'm holding their hand and I'm helping them talk through it and I'm helping find that place so that they know what's next and they find closure in their life, then when my life passes before me, I'm going to see what it's like for that person to look up into the face of the divine. And that's what drives me, George. I mean, nobody can frighten me or scare me or any of that kind of stuff. And I live so that I can make an impactful difference in the value of losing the fear of death and creating a program that people can find spiritual closure and be able to let go and not hold on in the most horrendous, concepts. Think of this, 70 cents of every dollar in healthcare spent in the last 6 months of life to extend life an average of 16 days.
To the phones now we go. Frank in Wisconsin to get us started. Frank, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Hi, George.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, Danyon.
Hey, Frank.
I enjoy listening to what you just had to say. I'm 79 years old, and in the next few days I will be checking into the veterans' home at King, Wisconsin.
At where, King?
King, Wisconsin.
King, yeah, K-I-N-G, Wisconsin. It's near, it's about 40, 50 miles west of Appleton.
Okay, and so at 79, what is the reason for you deciding to go into a CLC?
Well, I'm single. I have very little family left. I have a spinal stenosis that can't be repaired.
So that's a deterioration of, like, osteoporosis?
The spinal cord.
Well, it's the...
shriveling up of the cord.
Went to the left, and the other disc went to the right. So my cord makes a kink.
Oh, yeah, and that means you have bulging disc, and you probably have some impact where it's fused.
So they don't want to operate at my age because it's too dangerous.
And staff infection.
They don't want to see me end up in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
They don't want to give me shots because that could be a little risky also, so they don't want to do that either.
Stem cells one day, Frank.
Painkillers, and I'm quite comfortable with that.
Well, just got to always be careful because even at this age, painkillers and the CLC, I'm proud of the VA. I mean, I fight for veterans' rights. That's why I wanted to know where you were. And I think the CLCs are really good because being and working in four or five different ones and the camaraderie that comes within that, I think it's a smart move.
Yeah.
When you're talking, describing what you're doing, it's going to be painful. And when you have acute care, when you're in a CLC, you have acute care.
Anyway, I'm really looking forward to it. I've been there. It's on 320 acres.
Wow, that's huge.
It's a campus.
It sure is.
There are like four or five dormitory-type buildings that are like three and four stories high. They house about 720 residents at a time.
Well, good luck with your move, Frank.
I tell you
sounds
what,
good.
You need to send us a report. When you get there, You can go to the Twilight Brigade if you get to a computer because they have them there. Send us a report. Just go to Twilight Brigade and send it to Danyon.
And one day, Frank, think about stem cells.
Because
I just think the world of those things. Next up, we go to Charles in Texas. Welcome to the program. Hi, Charles.
Hello there.
Yeah, hi.
Well, hi, George. Thanks for taking the call.
You're very welcome.
Let's see. Boy, I got something pretty strong to say, actually, because my dad was a POW. He was a Marine.
Hoorah.
And he'd been... he was actually working with the embassy, and he had been doing a courier work, and he was shipping gold, and they captured him. But he was POW for a long time.
And what brand? What action?
We're assuming Vietnam, right?
Actually, officially, nobody was supposed to be there. It was in Laos, actually.
Right, that whole campaign. We weren't there, were we?
Yeah, we've never been there.
In the 50s, right? And so my dad wasn't officially there. So, of course, once he got captured, they didn't really want him to come back anyway. And he managed to get back, not because of anything the American government did, or even the American people, who seem to not really care about what's going on with the military and the stuff that they get into. I mean, it's like, go ahead and go sacrifice your life for what Smedley Butler talked about, actually. He was another Marine.
Let me ask you something, Charles. He was on active duty, and he was not in uniform?
I think he was in uniform at, I don't know about the in Laos. That's a good question. I think he was in uniform.
Okay, that makes sense. If he wasn't in uniform, that makes him a traitor. I mean, when you look at who you capture in embassy duty, and if you're in the 50s in Laos, 54 was the overthrow of the Vietnamese government, and we've been there since 54. So he would come under the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, who gave awards. They gave a medal for their people 2 years ago. So he's having trouble with the VA, or...
Cause, no, well, here's the problem. Okay, here's the problem. When he got back, which was through no help from the U.S. government or from the people of this country, but it was through some friends that he had in the Philippines. Actually, a lady that basically put up a big amount of money. She ransomed him.
She ransomed him.
Basically, she put up a big amount of money and said, you know, if you don't have any other use for him, send them to us, and we'll take care of him and everything. And so she took care of him for a while in the Philippines, and then he ended up back in the U.S. He ended up in Balboa, Naval Hospital over there in San Diego. And they made him so mad that he just walked right through the plate glass window.
Ouch.
And it was a thick plate glass window. I've been over there years later, but, I saw, anyway, very thick plate glass window. And he just walked straight through it, didn't even notice it was there, never looked back, really.
Just kept going.
Never wanted to have anything to do with the U.S. military or with the VA or any kind of benefits or anything. He never applied for it. He could care less.
Well, that's a lot of people, though, Charles. But you know what? I still thank him for serving. And, you know, when you go into those countries...
He's dead now, partly because of this, too. But that's another story there. You know, I mean, basically they murdered him, you know.
How old was he, Charles, when he died?
76, all about to be 77. And there was no reason why he had to die at 76. He could have lived. He was healthy. He had none of the no diabetes because we followed all the things.
Calm down, Charles. Take a breath.
All right. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I can understand what you've been through.
Alternatives. Y'all talk about alternatives all the time. We've known about those alternatives for ages ago because we knew we were going to have to take care of our own health. We're supposed to be responsible for our own health. And people are not in this country.
Well, let me ask you this, Danyon, and obviously Charles is upset over the way they treated his father. How often has that been going on?
Happens all the time. It's a cultural thing, okay? And what Charles is describing is someone, why I ask him if he was dressed, because I also know the other side, George. You know that.
Yes,
I know the other
side.
I
know you do.
And in looking at it, how you get distinguished and how they write him up and what they do, you know, the secret code on your DD-214. You know, people don't know that stuff, but I know it. Then if that means he was an expendable asset, and what Charles is describing is just that, and there is so much.
Once they were done with him, let him go, right?
Yeah. They drove him out of there so that they wouldn't have to be responsible.
Charles, we are sorry you had to go through this, and your father had to go through this. And it's not easy, Daniel. It's not easy.
Yeah, but thank you for keeping him that light lit for him, because he was serving his country, and when he had enough, he's exactly where so many veterans are today, Charles. We are here, and we're going to put the new administration's feet to the fire, and we're going to change that culture. So I'll be looking forward when this all starts, because George and I are stirring it up really well. I'm looking forward to you coming to the cause.
Joy in Santa Cruz, California, west of the Rockies, probably listening to us on KSCO. Hi, Joy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, actually, I'm listening on KFI, but...
Oh, you're picking it up from way up there, huh?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, because it's the only thing I can get on the internet. But hi, Danion.
Hi, Joy.
Hi, George.
Hello.
I wish you a Merry Thanksgiving.
I wish you one, too.
I wanted to say that something that a lot of people don't think about, yes, we need to honor our veterans, that is absolutely true. But we also need to honor the families of the veterans.
I agree.
Of course.
We have gone, and I being one, my father was in the military for 50 years.
50 years?
Yeah.
Bless him.
He is a judge in the Air Force.
What rank did he finally get up to?
He was a lieutenant colonel when he finally retired.
He did. Wow.
Yeah.
But he... He stayed with it, and then he served in civilian service in the same ranking area. You know, so he was reviewing. It's like on the board of military review.
Yeah, same capacity, though.
Well,
yeah.
What you do is you come out. Once you do your time, you can't stand but so long, and you come out, and then you can take civil service exam, and you can go right back.
Add more money, Daniel.
I understand. That's where contracting comes into play. And if you start watching where you get consulting forms, this is how you hide so much money. I mean, it's a cultural thing, George. We have to break the culture. And it's the same way of what we've experienced through this presidential election. All the things that come out that we get to see, what we like was Charles was, we get to see what really goes on. I've been a hospice volunteer for 40 years. For 40 years, but I've been a volunteer in the VA system, George, for 32 years, and I'm a former
Truly
Marine.
Remarkable.
What are you going to tell me? And I was once a defense contractor, implementation, regulations, specifications, and enforcement.
I think you were a mercenary, weren't you?
I was a little worse than that. They didn't have a name. and now we're called contractors.
All right, contractor, we're going to come back with you in a moment and take final calls right here on Coast to Coast to AM. Welcome back, Daniel Brinkley with us, our final segment. Daniel, I'm getting flooded by emails from people who just want you to know how much they appreciate what you do for the veterans.
Oh, thanks, George. I mean, I am them. You know, you stop for a moment and realize the people we're supporting, George, is your 9 years and my 6 years, but we're supporting us. We're trying to create a conscious awareness about who we are and what we need, and this is something I wanted to bring up, George. When you look at about 300,000 of the close to 700,000 people who served in the Gulf War, 1991, so much of the same symptoms are showing up in the Afghan and Iraqi people. So much of the Gulf War syndrome, exhaustion, tiredness, all these things are showing up again. So what has to happen is our country's armaments have to be reviewed. What we use as destructive weapons against our enemy as having a side effect on our veterans. And when you start to really look at that, then you realize that what happens to people, why there's so much suicide, why there's so much despair, why there's so much alcohol and drug abuse, is, George, they they take a good look and realize after what happened in Vietnam that their own government was killing them. And their own government knew better. And we watch these kids coming back to Afghanistan and Iraq, and I talk to them all the time, George. Not a one of them's over 35 years old.
Jeez.
And you look and see what kind of drugs they're on and the kind of therapies that they're using. And those who look at complementary therapies, those that are, I saw this thing called Weed for Warriors. These guys are dealing with looking at cannabis. And this thing's amazing because I missed all of that stuff, George. But I'm watching, and this is so important for the government to look at. I started looking at these people who are doing these projects, this Weed for Warriors, and I started to see a way that these guys who are hypervigilant, they are morally wounded from what they were doing in these countries, but they're finding ways to reintegrate with their family members, their wives, and their children. And that point right there should be a battle cry for every one of us, because there's so much abuse with people trying to deal with post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. There's so much problems that we have to look at our weaponization and see what the blowback is for our veterans.
Well, that's a good point. Anthony in Florida, east of the Rockies. Anthony, go ahead.
Hello.
Hi. Good to have you with us, Anthony.
Likewise. You know, it's a very, very great program, and I really got to follow this gentleman that you have, because I like his spiritual awakening, because he rang a bell with me and a lot of my awareness. What I was calling about was, I heard your montage of the military songs from all the branches of the military, and one you left out was the Merchant Marines. The Merchant Marines has contributed tremendously in every campaign that the United States has fought. You know, that no beans, no bullets, no battles. We delivered all the material to the soldiers to get that battle.
Yeah, done. Yeah. I always tossed them in with the regular Marines.
Say that again.
I always tossed them in with the regular Marines.
Yeah, but the Merchant Marine is they're not a military.
No.
But they operate under a code of conduct. And during World War II and a lot of Korea, because they had ships that these ships could be hired out and they could use as transports, because that becomes important, especially when you have to do buildup. So we have to make sure we recognize the Merchant Marines, because they did do their job. And so were you in the Merchant Marines during one of the conflicts?
Yeah, I was Gulf War II. I got the Expeditionary Medal for... You know, we were in combat zone. We had the full CPO, chemical protective overgarments, and we got trained by a Navy personnel that, yeah, we could probably get hit by something bad.
But that would be when you were offloading?
In the Persian Gulf. Yeah.
So your protective gear was when you're offloading. So you guys were drafted into service based on your access to ships.
Yes, that's correct.
Great. Well, you know something? Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it, Anthony. Marlo in Long Beach, California now, west of the Rockies. Hi, Marlo. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning to you, George.
You too.
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you. It's very heartening to know that there's people out there that understand the needs that need to be handled. I'm quite emotional from the last few days, of course, and the continuing protests that are going on now. And while I was waiting here, you mentioned one of the topics I needed to have mentioned, and that's the epidemic suicide rate of veterans. And,
it's about 40 a day.
And how much we need to do to resolve that. And that needs to be one of the toes held to the fire. If we're going to do right by our veterans, and George, thank you for your service too. I had 4 years in the Air Force, and thank you for the song.
Oh, thank you.
If we're going to do right by the veterans, we need to address that issue. We're losing too many good men and women.
And you know, but you got to take a look at this too. About 20% of everybody who commits suicide in America are veterans. And what they're doing is they're going through, You cannot drug someone to safety, Arnold. And what you're looking at is trying to find a pharmaceutical remedy by the average veteran, mine and George's age, right where we are, is 21 scripts. And so the average guy, Iraqi in Afghanistan, is 12 scripts. This is where the issue is, because you have drugs that you've been given in combat that says clearly on the label not to take under stressful situations. Then you become hypervigilant, which is what happens. And then no one, you come back to America, just the same as my period, the Vietnam era. Nobody, they say, we went to Fallujah and you went to the shopping mall. There's such a disconnect between the American populace and the veteran. And why I'm so happy, I don't know where this new administration's going to go, but anybody that talks that much trash about what he's going to do for the veterans, this is the veterans' opportunity. I believe that he'll do right, and I think this, that he has to deliver a world at 70 years old that he delivers to his children and his grandchildren. And he has to set up a system dealing with immigration, and he has to focus on the VA. And by working in the VA and making that a perfect system, and I know I can help, but to make that a perfect system will set a standard for healthcare across America, and we could really do something emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually, and mentally, physically, for our veterans and our populace. And that's my goal. I mean, I want to thank my wife Catherine for everything she does, and for everybody that's listening. I mean, you can donate. I mean, if you guys would just go to the Twilight Brigade and donate $5, every penny matters now, so that I can prepare the campaign to push really hard for VA reform. So please, everybody, help me. Catherine and I is the biggest support. Couple of celebrities or supporters, but I want just regular veterans to send me $5.
That's it. Keith in Houston, Wildcard Line. Go ahead, Keith.
Hello. I've got a couple points. In 1976, I did the math. I grew up in the Northeast, and we knew of the French and Indian Wars. Very few remember the quasi-French War, which is the tactics that the British used to subjoin our sailors. There's a 15-year period where there was no standing Marine or Navy, and I looked at that, and our 185th anniversary was actually in 1976, not the 200th, because there's a 15-year period that mm-hmm. ends out there. But I joined the Navy to be a corpsman and ended up being on an aircraft carrier, and I came ashore and went to Kingsville, Texas, and there's a corpsman there that took me under his wing. And as an EMT, I was the only EMT that wasn't part of the department that learned tons. And now I'm a paramedic, and I worked offshore for a while. The stuff this guy taught me, I used offshore, courtesy of our doctor.
Great experience.
No, oh, and thank you for being a corpsman. The two people that I loved the most was the corpsman and the radio man.
I wasn't a corpsman, but I wanted to be.
Yeah, but I just thank you because, you know, you and the radio man are the keys.
Yeah. One of the things that you brought up, I took care of my wife in her last few months.
Thank you.
Understood how it went. And you have given me a point to look to now. Whereas I am getting older and still have my skills, that I'm going to look you guys up and see how much I can help you.
Oh, come on. Look, this is the greatest experience. Look, we've trained thousands of people. Next week in West Los Angeles, right there, George, we have 40 people coming to the training in the VA. I'd like to compliment the VA on its palliative and end-of-life care programs, George. We are in telemedicine and palliative and end-of-life care. The VA is setting the model. It's doing it. I think I'm contributing to that in some small way, but I'm really proud of the VA. I'm really proud of the kind of people, especially in West Los Angeles, like Scott, the chief of staff, the new chief of staff. He's an expert in VA, DOD, geriatric medicine, and they're always looking at complementary and alternative. And I'm seeing a shift and a change, George, for the good.
Well, that's a good thing. It's about time, though, Daniel, isn't it?
And listen, I'm going to take this show. I'm going to push this show. you know, and I'm going to push what Coast to Coast does. And I always am thankful to Art and thank Art for his service and thank for him to care enough and for you, George, and for Premier to really care enough. We're veterans, and if we don't push and support and we don't create and use this show as a platform to drive the listeners to care and to position, because as like you said the last year, that we should come back periodically, and if there's an event that we need to react to or talk to a congressman or write the president, remember Donald Trump said he was going to put a phone in his office. Well, I think there's a smarter way to do that, but if we don't come together periodically and come to people and I say, hey, everybody, this is what's happening. This is what we need to do. Please, let's take action. Then we're a power, George, and we can make concrete differences for the first time than I've seen in the last, I would say, 16 years.
Let's go to Joe in Arizona now. Joe, good morning. Go ahead.
Hello, Daniel. Hello, George.
Hi, Joe.
I was a radioman and cryptographer in the Navy for more than 10 years. And as
hugs and kisses, man.
There's your radio man.
As such, I have a heck of a lot of interest going on with frequencies and vibrations. Now, years ago, I read that one of the main frequencies used in the Philadelphia experiment was 450 megacycles. Well, I checked out the formula on that. One wave at 450 megs comes up to be about just a touch over 26 inches, and that rang a bell because that's right in the area of the cubit and hand breadth that was used as the base measurement for the Temple of Solomon. I know around the Mediterranean area that there were all kinds of different measurements for this. However, I believe that Hiram Abiff, the architect, knew of this idealized cubit and hand breadth, and as such, turned it into a resonant cavity. And also, this is why I believe he was murdered, is because it's in Kings or Chronicles, I can't remember which, but I think that's why he was murdered, is because the powers that be did not want this information to get out. I know the time is short. If anybody wants to see more on this line of thinking, go to my website, which is SidoniaResurrection.com.
All right, we've got that.
This is what I see. I agree with you. We live in a quantum world. Everything is electrical. And once you look at frequencies and harmony, and then you go back to Tesla, 3, 6, and 9, these basic numbers in the Tesla formulas, and everything is frequencies and harmony. So I'm very interested, and I agree with what you're saying. And you look at all the frequencies and how the resonance of the earth, like insulin's in the key of C, you start to really understand the spiritual nature of quantum mechanics gives a better relationship to the spiritual nature of who we are than any other formulation of physics or Newtonian mechanics I have ever seen, or chemistry.
What I also appreciate you, Danian, is you don't get involved in whether it's right or wrong to be in Iraq or Afghanistan. All you care about are the troops that are there.
That's it. I can't make policy. I can't do anything about policy, but I know what serving is like. I don't get into that. You know, I understand a whole lot more than I ever talk about it. But my job is this. When you come to the place when you get to palliative and end of life, okay, I have 40 years there and 31 years at it and tens of thousands of hours knowing what's next. And I've created a mindset to look, and I created a training, well, with help, like we created a training program and the support of Catherine and my family. I couldn't do it. But I care about that spiritual human being that's done something that has to do with his honor. And in his honor, he comes into a system that's full of a bunch of bureaucrats that never really get to the core of caring about his needs and shoving paper at them. This has to change. And what I see, George, and this is what really bugs me, I see guys in their 80s come in, and they're lost, even at the at what we call Building 500. They don't know where to go. They got a letter. I catch them. I look at the letter, and they go to a guy who's got 3 years in. The union says he has 3 years in, and he treats this elder veteran like he's a dog, you know, and he's talking to him. And I see this all the time. This cultural psychology has to be changed because this guy should be getting the kind of service that we think a veteran deserves for defending his right to act the way he is until it gets to be that veteran. And I care about palliative and end-of-life care and why, George. I know what's next. But the way you back-engineer health care is you sit where I sit in palliative and end of life, and you see what works and what doesn't work, and how to create pathways to create a culture so that veterans can find that moment to create closure. And this is my goal. It's what I came back for. It's what I got up for. It's what I've always said for the last 40 years. And I have successfully moved in and out of the government to win the other day to realize that once again, my support in helping with the No Vet Die Alone, this standard end of life care model, I've reached with what I set out to do a certain pinnacle. And I'm very proud of that and being a veteran and where we are today. Come on, George. If we get people to come to the Twilight Brigade and they listen when something happens or an action is taken, if we time it just right, we drop or call our local representative, we express concern about it, and we do this as these things unfold, then look at the impact of who we are, the people of the night, the impact that we can make because we're listening, allows the veterans, and we care, and this is our opportunity. And I just thank everybody, Tommy, you, everybody.
Well, Daniel, my friend, give out your websites, will you?
Okay, I'm at The Twilight Brigade, and then me is just danielandcatherine.com. And, you know, I think everybody should go up on Amazon and take a good look at the Veterans Christmas CD that Tom put together.
Oh, yeah, it's called the Holiday Magic Christmas CD.
Come on, everybody. Step out and step up and support what we're doing and support this program and buy this CD and give it as a gift. It's really good. And please send the Twilight Brigade, go there and send me that $5.
You got it. Daniel, thank you, my friend. Let's talk as we get close to the holidays again as well. Okay?
I love you, George. I appreciate everybody this night. And you veterans, may you be blessed with all the joy and happiness that you deserve.
That's Daniel Brinkley. All the sites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. When I come back in just a moment, it's time for Open Lines.